Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Timber Living Log Cabins. For your perfect workspace, living space or hideaway, timberliving.ie.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
So come here, we loved Mary Mullen, didn't we? We did. Great listening to Mary Mullen. Love Mary Mullen, says Helen. I just wanted to say this morning's interview with Mary Mullen, says another text, it was an absolute thrill, entertaining, endearing, above all touching. Loved her choice of music and song. Person here worked with Mary in that country and western play in Galway all those years ago. I was a young actress starting out. She was a wonderful mentor with a light touch. Great to hear her today. I feel I understand the world and theatre and everything in a through a slightly different lens now after Mary Mullen. She was great. And time now for a few recommendations on what to watch on screens, big and small, over the next week. And today we're joined by Gráinne Humphreys, director of the Dublin Theatre Festival, and Michael Doherty, movies editor of the RTÉ Guys. You're both very welcome, guys.
Cheers.
So, Gráinne, you're just back from the Venice Film Festival, where it was more about directors this year than
because of the strike. Although actors. There were still a number of actors actually landed. I think Jessica Chastain actually was there, just landed the day that I left, actually. But I mean, I think
but all making the point about the
point strike, about though. The strike. Yeah, yeah. And there were a few that were there because they've been granted waivers. So the Ferrari gang were there, for instance. But for the most part, they were represented by the directors and the teams. And in a way, the auteur theory, the idea that the director is king, it really works for a film festival actors. Do you know what I mean?
Even if half the directors this year were cancelled men.
They were cancelled men, yes. Yeah, and actually some of them didn't turn up either. But what was really interesting is the triumph and the huge success of Poor Things, which is the Yorgos Lanthimos new film with Emma Stone. I mean, just universally loved. I had a ticket and couldn't get there, which was so annoying because it's horrible to be the one missing out on talking about it. But for 3 days, everyone talked about nothing else.
And this is an Irish produced
film. It's an Irish produced film, Element Pictures, so Ed Gainey and Andrew Lowe, and just took the place by storm. Everyone talking about how smart, how brilliant Emma Stone now launched into the kind of race for best actress.
She's brilliant, though.
She's brilliant. Mm. It's wonderful. Willem Dafoe is in it. And actually, in a year when everybody, and myself included, talks about films being too long, it was a film that nobody talked about that. They talked about the invention and the kind of brilliance and the look of the film.
Okay.
And I think that's, as I said, wonderful to have yet another potential Irish interest for next year's
Fantastic.
Oscars.
Fantastic. Poor Things. So remember that. We'll be hearing a lot more about that. Now, Sofia Coppola's Priscilla getting a very muted response.
Yeah, and kind of deserving it. I mean, obviously we all saw, well, not obviously everyone saw, but a lot of people went to Elvis and it was glorious and loud and, you know, Austin Butler was incredible. And this is kind of like the flip side in a way. It's kind of like her story. I mean, to my mind, sometimes undecided about Sofia Coppola, but the film just feels a story of a very...
Bit vague?
It's a bit vague. It's
a Sophie
bit
Coppola
dim.
A bit vague sometimes.
She
like,
is.
Sometimes
we talked
it works.
About.
It's dreamy like.
It's dreamy. And sometimes it's just, it's sort of superficial and kind of tissue light. I think the problem with this one for me is that I feel like the story actually has a very dark tone to it. I mean, obviously she was incredibly young when she met Elvis. The way in which he kind of took her into his household and brought her from Germany to stay with him in Graceland. It's dark and it's somewhat dangerous. And it feels that because Priscilla is one of the exec producers and endorsed and indeed was in Venice for the actual screening, that she can't maybe, mine it for maybe some of the elements that she could have pulled out. So it feels
punches.
A tiny like the punches are pulled.
Okay, we'll come back to a couple more of the things you've seen at Venice. But Michael, you've been looking at some upcoming releases too. And here's another one with big Irish interest that people might not have heard of. So it's not coming out till the start of October. But Foe has Saoirse Ronan and Paul Mescal.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, two of our finest young stars, both recently Oscar nominated, starring in one of, it's a really cool story, a psychological sci-fi thriller about a young couple who seem to have it all and then a stranger knocks on the door one day and everything changes. It's a bit like we mentioned about Poor Things. It's not a standard narrative. It's very off kilter. It's very offsetting, which is what you want. You want to be
and
on your guard.
It's made in Australia. Is it kind of rural Australia gothic kind of?
Yeah, it starts in rural Australia and then it goes into futuristic. You know, it goes off in tangents. And two very very what I love about it, particularly about Saoirse and Paul, is that they are screen actors. They're actors who started off on working with a screen in front of them, working not too much working on stage, but working to the screen. They know how to manipulate an audience with just with movement, and they know they can trust an audience that they can read what they're saying in their faces. And both Saoirse and Paul have great faces for this type of thing. And as a result, there's a lot of close-ups you can see even in the trailer, a lot of super close-ups to these guys because they can handle it. Okay. And it's great to see two young Irish talents.
Stars.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fantastic.
Movie stars all the way.
So that's called Foe. You'll be hearing a lot more about that too. Let's go back to Venice, Gráinne. And there's been a lot of talk about Maestro. This is the film about the composer, Leonard Bernstein. Like, how many people were involved in this film from conception to getting it to the screen? Hundreds, if not thousands of people. And nobody said... Bradley Cooper, if you're playing a Jewish person, don't put on a big prosthetic nose. Like, it's cracked.
Except that actually you forget about the nose after about, you know, 4 minutes. I mean, to be honest, he is really good in it. And I would actually say that a lot of that feels
away with
like,
it, like this is
they're
not gonna...
absolutely going to get away with it.
Okay.
I mean, his performance is incredible. Carey Mulligan playing his wife is also extremely good. It's very well directed. It has some wonderful sequences that are really kind of extravagant and inventive. It is too long, and it's way too long. And the other thing that I think is an issue about it is it's called Maestro. And yet this is the man who was behind West Side Story, and there's barely a mention of West Side Story in it. So if you're going hoping for a film that's going to give you an insight into this wonderful composer, conductor and his life and the works that made him or the ones that he brought to the world, you're not really going to, you're kind of stuck in a slightly like a soap opera with a very, you know, kind of like annoying genius. So again, you know, I'd love to have had more music in a way. But Bradley Cooper's shaping up. Let's see the next film.
All right. Michael, John Carney has a new movie coming out on Apple TV at the end of the month, Flora and Son, out on September 29th.
Yeah, it's the latest of his music as a redemptive force movies following the success of Once and Begin Again. I mean, Carney's terrific at this. This is his wheelhouse. You know, it's a lovely story. And I spoke to him at length last week, John, and he was saying that he skates very close, perilously close to the cheesiness, and he knows it.
Yeah.
He understands it.
Okay, yeah.
And on paper, his things sound really cheesy, and this sounds cheesy. You know, it's a single mom played by Eve Hewson, who's terrific, and like she's sort of, her life is going nowhere. She finds a guitar and a skip, and then suddenly her life, you know, takes off with the power of music. You'd be going, oh, here, good luck. But actually, you know, it's so wonderfully done. He's so well able to tell this story. And he's telling it, he's able to tell it because as well of the power of his actors. Like I say, Eve Hewson, never been better. He gets Joseph Gordon-Levitt to play sort of a guitar mentor. And I when I was chatting to John, I said, I presume because he's the big American name, I imagine you had to sort of hopefully get him. And he goes, no, he begged me to be in it. He wanted to be in it. I mean, Carney didn't want him because he didn't envision him in the role. And then you have a quick shout out for a rising star, Oren Kinlan, who's Lawrence Kinlan's son. He plays the aunt's son of Flora and Son, and he is terrific. Okay. Watch out for this guy.
And it's great that Apple are an outlet for making.
Absolutely, it'll get a week in the big screen, and it's going to pop up on Apple.
Okay, listen, Past Lives, Gráinne. People are raving, like
this
masterpiece.
Yeah, Mike and I, we were talking about it. It really is one of the films of the year. And I was lucky enough, actually, I saw it last night in Lighthouse, brought my partner, and the whole way home, we argued about the different ways that you could see the story of...
It sounds like a small kind
It's
of
a
film,
small
yeah.
story about two Korean children who have a very special bond. And then the girl leaves to go to Canada with her family when they are 12. And it really kind of skips forward 12 years to when they kind of reconnect, and then follows on another 12 years when they actually meet in person again in New York, where she's moved to. And it's a story about people looking at the life they might have led, or the path that they didn't follow, and wondering whether or not they did right or wrong. And it's really powerful. There's about four people in it, but it's intoxicating to watch. And there's loads of silences. I mean, silence has never been used so well.
It's also very brave because, like, this is a first-time director to actually have the courage to have those silences. And this is a woman who's steeped in the theatre, and yet she understands this had to be a big screen because it's a story about time and distance, so it wouldn't have worked on the stage.
Yeah.
But it's her story. She was that Korean girl. Her family moved to Canada, and she left behind a young chap who was her friend, and sort of, and then he came back later. So it actually is. So she understands the story very well, and through that, I can't stop talking about it either.
From both of you, like
go and see it.
Okay, and that's called Past Lives.
Past Lives.
Grainne. Season two of The Newsreader starting on RT2 on Wednesday at 10:20 p.m. But season one is on The Player.
Season one is on The Player, and watch it, because it is, it's a story of a kind of great double act. It's a recreation of two newsreaders in 80s Australia, and the first season will set up how they come in. One is a very established newsreader, kind of diva-like character played by Anna Torr from Mindhunter, and Sam Reed plays a young guy who comes in, you know, it's a bit like, you know, the kind of, you know, ingenue coming in and finding his way through the system. It's brilliantly done in that it uses real-life news footage and kind of uses that as a sort of supporting structure for the story of a TV station in Australia.
But it's a smart TV. Yeah.
It's brilliant TV. I mean, okay. It's absolutely addictive. I saw the first two episodes and I literally was going, I need more, I need more. And it's brilliantly directed, brilliantly cast. And again, just gives you spins. The new series will open on the 1987 election. And kind of the team agree that they will make an announcement at 7:45 as to who has won, knowing that they can never do that. It's not possible to know. And it's a combination of both that interpersonal dynamic of a broadcast team and then looking at the bigger thing. Brilliant.
Okay, so that's
brilliant.
The Newsreader, RT2 season one on The Player. It's Wednesday, 10:20. Michael, could you wrap in a mention of The Morning Show back on Apple on Wednesday, which is kind of their house of cards, and people would be excited about
that. It is, yeah, a very big deal.
And also our own big event here, Friday night, The Return of the Late.
Yeah, people might have heard about this. Yeah, it's a new host, and The Owl is back, so people will be happy. New set. So yeah, Friday night, you know, To Whom It Concerns, etc. Yeah. Morning Show, season three. It's the big names again. They're back. Emmy award winning. It's probably the biggest thing that Jennifer Aniston has done since Friends. That's really taken off.
Yeah.
And this is season three, so it takes a bit of an edge. It was showing about in the earlier seasons how it can be a bit saccharine, that whole world of morning TV and what goes on and a lot of fluff subjects. Season three is going to tackle, the journalists themselves decide, we want to tackle heavier subjects. So it's going to go a bit deeper.
No, I'm not sure where I feel about that. But look,
it does have John Hamm and Stephen Fry who are joining the cast. So, you know.
Okay. And at least one of those people can act.
We won't say which, okay.
Thank you very much, Michael Doherty and Grainne Humphreys. Look, we've no time for music, but we've had plenty of music today. You can listen back